Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as you just heard on the news, Senators McCain and Obama will be appearing together at Ground Zero today and then in that non-political service forum at Columbia University tonight. It's easy to wonder whatever happened to the new politics this campaign was supposed to represent outside of this forum. It seems to be reverting to a traditional battle of left versus right, gotchas versus smears in many cases. They were supposed to represent post-partisanship, both of them. But to look at the two platforms and two conventions, you'd never really know it. We will speak this hour with an Obama supporter, a McCain supporter, and then fact-checker Bill Adair about the state of the campaign. First up, Paul Begala, Democratic strategist who helped Bill Clinton win in 1992. He's a CNN contributor and author of a new book that you might describe as being on message. It's called Third Term, Why George W. Bush Hearts John McCain. Paul, always nice to have you on WNYC. Hello.
Brian, thanks. It's nice to be back.
Has this campaign, in your opinion, become an old politics campaign on both sides rather than a new politics campaign?
Yeah, both sides. I'd say three sides. I have to say I work at CNN, but the media is at least as responsible as anybody else for chasing the new bright, shiny object, for inflating any kind of a scandal or a poll or a gaffe as if they really were as important as, say, healthcare or energy or global warming or jobs. There's a trivialization of this election that I'm surprised by, I have to say. And everybody plays a role in that, myself included. You know, I did write this book, and it's all issues. None of it personal attacks. None of it, you know, smears. All of it simply an analysis of McCain's voting record, his positions on the issues.
And we'll get into that as we go. But on Obama, since you're here as more of an Obama supporter, he accepted the idea of public financing on principle,
right,
then threw it out when it wasn't to his advantage. He accepted the idea of a series of town hall issue debates offered by McCain, then abandoned them, except, I guess, for the Rick Warren one and this one tonight,
right,
when he seemed to be in the lead. What kind of new politics is that?
Well, it's a couple of different things. First off, I think he did the right thing in turning down the public financing because I'm going to vote for him. I frankly supported his opponent in the primaries. I don't work for him, but I think he's a great guy, and I think he'd be a great president. Gandhi said you have to become the change you seek in the world. He is financing his campaign in an even more ethical way than the public financing. He's getting small donations from people who believe in him rather than taxpayer donations, presumably a third to a half of whom probably don't even support him. The vast majority of his, over 90% of his contributors, have given him less than $100. Now, you give $100, you're not going to be ambassador to Luxembourg. You're just giving it because you believe in a candidate and his policies. So I actually think he did the right thing on the campaign finance thing. Now, as for the forums, how many is the right number? He needs to go to some states, McCain another. I think it's wonderful that he's doing this forum at Columbia tonight on citizen service, and I think it is shameful that the Republicans were so contemptuous of community organizers at their convention, sneering at something that Obama did that was faith-based, family-based, community-based self-help. That's supposed to be Republican values.
Let me broaden the question about the conventions. I was in Denver and St. Paul. I saw the Republicans return to the sneering ways of yesteryear that John McCain was supposed to be putting an end to. But I also saw the Obama speech move away from yes, we can, and post-partisanship to a laundry list of Democratic policies that could have been from almost any time. Do you see it differently?
I do. I see it as a guy actually saying what he might do if he were president. One of my concerns about Obama has been that he began the campaign a little too professorial for me, frankly. And I'm a professor at Georgetown, but, you know, I don't play one on TV. My advice, in fact, has been put the jam on the lower shelf where the little folk can reach it. Well, he did that in Denver. He said, here's what I will do if you make me your president. And I think that's great, because I think he just might win, and now we know what he would do. And people loved that speech, and they responded to it. And what a difference. I was at Denver, but not at St. Paul, but I covered it out of New York, our CNN Bureau in New York. And if you look at even the toughest, most partisan speeches in Denver, they were, I guess, Brian Schweitzer, the governor of Montana.
Right. John Kerry.
John Kerry, Bob Casey, the young senator from Pennsylvania. In each case, they talked about issues. These were not personal, sneering, snotty, sarcastic attacks. They were tough, but I think fair, right? Schweitzer excoriated McCain for opposing renewable energy. Well, that's all fair. Contrast that with Giuliani and the governor of Alaska, who I thought gave remarkably sarcastic, bitter, and divisive speeches. Now, I'm all for partisanship at a convention, but this was no longer the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan and his kind of sunny, aw shucks humor. This was bitter and divisive.
We can take some phone calls for Paul Begala at 212-433-WNYC or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for a comments page, 212-433-9692 if you want to call in. I saw you a fair amount on CNN during the Democratic convention as I was moving between hotel room and Pepsi Center and the stadium and all of that. And you were very critical for much of that week about how soft the tone seemed to be on McCain.
Right.
And then we certainly saw the sneering at Obama that the Republicans did with Bannon in St. Paul. In your opinion, did the Dems finally get there in maybe the speeches that you just mentioned and maybe Bill Clinton's speech and Obama's itself, or not really?
You know, not all the way. I do think Schweitzer, Casey, and Kerry probably gave the best, you know, Democratic partisan speeches at a Democratic convention. I think Hillary and Bill Clinton, very, very important for them to help unify the party and for them to vouch for Barack Obama. I mean, my goodness, when President Clinton stood up there and said, everything I've learned in my 8 years as president and in the years that I've done charity work since tells me that Barack Obama is ready to be president, that was more powerful than any attack on McCain could have been. So I think they did their job. But I think Obama's convention speech was the best convention speech I have ever seen in 9 conventions that I have attended or covered. It was that good because he did both. He said what he would do, but then he very sharply counterpunched against a lot of the nonsense and claptrap that's been thrown at him. But all in all, I think, frankly, the Democratic Party doesn't seem to be fighting for its nominee with the same passion that the Republican Party is fighting for its. Now, it doesn't mean that the Democrats should be sneering and sarcastic and bitter, but why can't they stand up, as I've tried to do, trying to model the behavior I want my party to exhibit, and go through the record? Yeah, I got over 800 footnotes in this book, and I think I built a pretty tight case that on all the issues that matter, McCain would actually follow Bush's policies. Now, that's not a smear. There's about 20% of Americans think Bush's policies are great. They should all vote for McCain. But for the rest of us, I think the record is really powerful that McCain actually would continue Bush's policies. This is why his campaign is built on distracting us away from that reality.
And that is a policy-oriented critique, to be sure, and it is also very much on message. This is exactly what the Obama campaign is trying to emphasize. Third term, which is the title of your book, 4 more years. And the theme is basically true. I think it's just undeniably true as a matter of fact that McCain supported most of the Bush administration policies that will matter going forward, how much to wage war in Iraq and Iran and elsewhere, the tax cuts that were mostly skewed to the top 1%, the health care and Social Security policies, very much like Bush's. But he's got this maverick past
right.
on other issues, big issues like campaign finance
right.
and global warming and opening up Vietnam, where he was held prisoner with John Kerry,
right.
When other Republicans said, no, they're communists, we don't want to deal with them. So how much can you really sell this third-term attack as what McCain is really all about at his core?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Brian. I think that certainly on reopening ties to Vietnam, Senator McCain was instrumental, and he did buck his party. Now, he had strong support from his brothers-in-arms, who were Democratic Vietnam War heroes,
right.
like John Kerry and Bob Kerry. But it is undeniable that he took a lot of guff for that, and he should get credit for that. But on his other brief heresies from Republican orthodoxy, he's renounced them. This was the guy who in 2000 said that that conservative evangelical preachers like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, who he called by name, he said they were evil agents of intolerance. Well, now he's endorsed by a bunch of pastors, like John Hagee of San Antonio, like Rod Parsley of Ohio, who make Falwell and Robertson look like Dale Carnegie. He has gone to the extreme wing of his party, and he's done it with great gusto. And I think that that's a real shame. I frankly think it reflects on McCain's public character. The fact that he is willing to embrace that kind of radical agenda tells me something about him. It tells me something about the kind of president he might be.
They certainly could go after him on the flip-flop thing. heavy on the agents of intolerance, on being for comprehensive immigration reform before he was against it.
Right.
You know, many, many big things, though they're trying to hit him on somehow just being Bush 3. And the McCain campaign is trying to emphasize character, that his personal character will prevent him from being a carbon copy of anyone.
Right.
And I guess that's where the debate lies. But one of the main criticisms of Obama from the Republicans that counters that is that Obama hasn't really accomplished anything in government like McCain-Feingold, McCain-Kennedy, McCain-Lieberman, McCain-Kerry. What are Barack Obama's biggest accomplishments, and where has he really stood up to his own party to deserve this postpartisan label that he's trying to compete with McCain for?
Well, a couple of places. I've never worked in Illinois state government, but I worked at the Texas legislature, and I doubt the Illinois legislature is much cleaner. Obama came into the Illinois Senate and was a reformer. And believe me, you know, back what they used to say in Austin, Texas, when I worked in that capital, they'd say, I'd rather be a flea-bitten hound and bay at the moon than pretend to be a reformer in state government. He was, and he was successful at it. He also reformed the death penalty system in that state, which was a national and international disgrace. He came to Washington, and I do have reasonably close ties with the Democrats in Washington, and he came in as a rock star. And instead of simply using his rock star status to raise money for his colleagues and run around the country and, you know, prepare to run for president, he took them on. He took big pieces of the ethics reform legislation, and he pushed them through, restricting the influence of lobbyists. He had one idea, which even he couldn't get his colleagues to go for, that I thought was great, which was to take the ethics committee process out of the Senate and to have, I think it'd be retired federal judges and retired senators, take a look at these ethics complaints. They went crazy in his own party. Believe me, behind the scenes, there were savage attacks on Obama for that. So I'm pretty impressed that he'll buck his party when he needs to. And then on the substance, the single greatest threat in the world, we ought to remember on September 11th, is nuclear weapons in the hands of terrorists. While the Bush administration was dithering, Obama reached across the party aisle. He chose up to work with Dick Lugar, the Republicans' foremost expert, I think, in the Senate on foreign affairs, passed important legislation to get control of loose nukes. He did the same thing even with Tom Coburn. He's a senator from Oklahoma who's so conservative that he calls for the death penalty for abortion providers. Obama reached across the aisle with him because Coburn wanted to reform the way contracts are given and wanted more transparency in that. So Obama reached across to the guy who's probably the biggest pariah in the eyes of the Democrats and worked with him to try to bring reform and transparency. So I think he's got quite a good record on those things, frankly. Maybe he doesn't talk about it enough. But in 3 or 4 years in the Senate, probably passed as much important legislation as McCain has in 26.
Paul Begala, my guest on WNYC. We'll talk to a McCain supporter in just a couple of minutes, who was a big fish in Afghanistan at the beginning of the war there and now leads New York Veterans for McCain. Gary Bernson coming up in a few minutes, but we'll take some of your phone calls for Paul Begala now, CNN contributor, strategist for the Democrats, author now of Third Term, Why George W. Bush Heart John McCain, or I guess you have to use the active verb, hearts John McCain, when you see that symbol. Fred in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
This is Fred in Rockland County. I'm a Democrat who worked for the Kennedys and Hubert Humphrey in the past, and even for Hillary when she ran for Senate. But I fail to see where Mr. Begala answered your question about why Obama did not go on with the suggestion of doing about 10 debates across the country, which actually would have taken a lot of money-raising effort out of the campaigns because the American people would have been able to hear both of these people more than just once or twice, but across the country on different issues, and certainly they would have touched on some of the local issues during these debates at all. Why did Obama turn this down?
I don't want to speak for him. I don't work for him. I have to say that they're doing several of these forums and 3 national debates. I got to tell you that a lot. I much prefer debates because I like doing that kind of stuff. But they're not exactly illuminating very often. You know, yeah, if there's a gaffe, the press will jump all over it. But very often, they're just an exercise in memorizing sound bites and repeating them. McCain's quite a good debater. I saw him in the primaries. Barack's a pretty good debater, although I think Hillary was generally considered to be a better debater in her party, and probably Biden better still. But I don't think they're the be-all and end-all. I really don't. I think that in fact, What the problem with doing those is that it takes you a day or two to prepare for each one because the media scrutiny is so strong. And so it sort of increases the isolation of the campaign. If I had my druthers as a citizen, I'd rather have them out every day campaigning where some ordinary citizen can grab them, because generally the ordinary citizens, they frankly ask better questions than TV guys like me.
I think that was one of their big considerations. They were so focused on trying to get out and campaign in all these swing states
right.
that they were afraid they'd spend the whole campaign season in debate prep or forum prep, and it would take too much time away from that. Of course, they also probably figured that they didn't want to give McCain, who they considered the weaker one at that time, the level platform with Obama at forums where McCain does fairly well. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Paul Pagala. Hello.
Hi, Paul. First of all, I want to thank you. I really appreciate your reasonable commentary on politics in general. But I wanted to ask you, you know, a lot of Republicans, I'm a registered independent, but I'm definitely going to be voting for Obama. But a lot of my Republican friends and Republicans that I've heard on the news have been saying that it's going to be tricky for Barack Obama to bring up the experience argument with Sarah Palin, saying that she's not experienced enough because they think that Obama's experience is comparable to hers. And I'm wondering what you think about that. And one more question as well, you know, what do you think of Sarah Palin's reluctance or, you know, absence from media questions? And has this ever happened before with any other vice presidents? And
right. Well, she's doing a Charlie Gibson interview tonight, and that'll certainly be something we talk about on tomorrow morning's show. But Paul Pagala, there you go.
Right. And Charlie's a good journalist, and he'll put her through her paces, and she'll do just fine. I think a lot of this is rope-a-dope. Oh, poor me. I'm just a hockey mom. Oh, give me a break. You know, she's a very talented politician, and she should be treated as such, both with the respect that requires, but also with the analysis and the criticism that comes with that. I'm much more interested, though, in the top of the ticket. You know, Democrats clobbered Spiro Agnew and beat him. They clobbered Dan Quayle and beat him. Well, guess what? Nixon won and Bush Sr. won. These things are won at the presidential level. I do think, though, that perhaps there's an interesting contrast that the campaign has not drawn and the press has not drawn. When Obama chose Biden, he went through a very rigorous process chaired by Caroline Kennedy from here in Manhattan and Eric Holder, who's a former top official of the Justice Department. And they settled on Joe Biden, a guy who Obama knows well. He serves on the Foreign Relations Committee with. He's traveled the world with, spent thousands of hours with, and debated him probably a dozen times as an opponent in the primaries. And contrast that with the very rash, reckless, I think impulsive and impetuous choice of Sarah Palin. She may be perfect. She may be terrible. We don't know yet. But the truth is McCain doesn't either. He chose his vice president based on one meeting 2 years ago and a 15-minute phone call.
We are just about out of time. But on that point, just before you came on, I cited Arianna Huffington's column today on HuffPost, in which she says all this talk about Palin, even if you're slamming her for book banning or lies about the bridge to nowhere or whatever, is a distraction.
Yep.
If you're not talking about the results of Bush policies and McCain's ties to them, the theme of your book, then the Republicans succeed in distracting America yet again with her candidacy and all those little debates instead of the big issues. How much do you believe that?
100%. There is, I believe, probably an office, probably a whole wing of the McCain campaign headquarters that's labeled, you know, the distraction factory. Because they know they can't. Look, if they could, if they had done a good job in the eyes of the public, they would be running a campaign saying, we've been running things for 8 years and things are going great. It's morning in America. So all of this is a distraction. And I would not either demonize or patronize the governor of Alaska. She's a powerful, important, talented official, but I'm not as interested in her as I am in McCain. And I think McCain, he showed us just like Bush that he's a reckless guy who goes with his gut. And I'm scared to death that if he gives that little thought to his vice president, how much thought is he going to give to his next invasion? And I think that's what got us in trouble with Bush.
Paul Pagala, political consultant to the Democrats, former advisor to President Clinton, CNN contributor, and author now of Third Term, Why George W. Bush Hearts John McCain, published by Simon & Schuster. Thanks for coming on. Hope we can do this again.
Brian, thanks so much. Can't wait to do it again.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Yes, a McCain supporter next. Gary Burnson, who was Bin Laden tracker in Afghanistan. He was there before 9/11. He was there after 9/11 when the Afghanistan war began. In fact, he says, were it not for bureaucrats in the Bush administration stopping him, he could have gotten Bin Laden after 9/11. He's a McCain supporter now. We'll talk to him about why in a minute.